the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, where you can hear us right now on our website, listening live on your mobile for free, or tune in mobile. Okay, so we got to get to, to some degree, the story, because it's a mystery, and I don't know. This Malaysia plane, this Malaysia Airlines jet that had taken off Saturday a.m., was it? It took off Saturday morning at 12:41 a.m. from Kuala Lumpur, was due into Beijing at 6:30 a.m. So it's, you know, about a six-hour flight from Malaysia to China, to the capital of China. And the plane loses radio contact, everything. There's no distress call. There's no mayday. There's nothing. Simply gone. They lose radio contact. 239 people. The pilots never signaled any trauma or danger of any kind. They lost radio contact between Malaysia and Vietnam. So they were not that far out of Kuala Lumpur when it happened. It happened over this body of water that is called the Gulf of Thailand, I believe. By the way, I understand it's Bloomberg, so I'm not necessarily faulting them, but it is the most accessed news story of all of the news stories on this aircraft, and it's the page here with the Malaysia Airlines story, and they're showing you the stock price. You know,
well, Phil wanted, people want to know what the stock price is.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just, I'm not complaining. What I'm doing is, this is where people always miss the hints about human nature. This is where we always, we act so surprised when things happen that are terrible, and we never take into consideration the everyday clues that we get about human nature. The everyday clues that we get about human nature. Why would this be the number one access story, the Bloomberg story? Why are people more concerned with their money, their stock prices? Why is this to people, a lot of people, why is this simply the representation of a stock price instead of the deaths of 239 people? I'm not saying that you're not going to change those people. I don't want to do anything to change those. You can't change people like that. You're never going to change people like that. People that are more interested in stock price of an airline than the actual catastrophe are always going to be that way. I'm not here to judge them. I'm here to say to all of us, myself included, let's start dealing with reality instead of these fantasies that we go through, okay? Let's start. I think we watch too much Oprah and we don't watch enough Bloomberg.
Well, you just got done saying that was a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't get you, Mr. Henry. How do you figure?
Well, I'll tell you, bud.
Jesus, this sounds like Mr. Wizard or a commercial, an infomercial for a jockstrap or something, for God.
Well, don't sound like a jockstrap.
Wait. How do I figure? I'll tell you. You know, we live in a world where we always complain about the way it should be and it isn't. We never deal with the way it is. We would go further if we just dealt with things, how things are. We would go further in solving the everyday problems of life than to constantly be complaining about the bad way that it is. You take a look at this story about the Bloomberg showing us the stock price, and we all react the way I sort of just reacted until I kind of slapped myself, you know.
No, Phil, don't put yourself in the minority of really smart people. You reacted that way.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I didn't react that way. What I'm saying is, when I thought about it, I thought, wait, what am I complaining about? I got to start accepting life the way it is, and I have to deal with it on that level. People, for whatever reason, there's a lot of them. Maybe most of them, the number one website to access this Malaysia story is the Bloomberg site. That's a financial site. People are going to see what happened to their stock price on the Malaysia Airlines. Does that trouble you? Well, who cares? That's the reality. So when we look at that and we say, oh, gosh, that's really bad, rather than say, well, you know, that's how it is, we say that's really bad, and we're always taken by surprise when the next bad thing happens. For instance, if somebody starts to short stocks, if someone does what they did in 2008 and begins to manipulate the system so that we're all losing money and the entire economy almost crashes, we won't be so shocked because we know there's swine out there that are looking to beat the market any way they possibly can, no matter what the situation. While you and I are sitting here crying about 239 people who have died, and yeah, that's a bad thing.
Are you asking me to lose my humanity because there's some, as you put it, Phil, swine, some low-living, crawling sludge, something that I would, ordinarily, I'd have it stuck?
Yeah, it'd be stuck in the crack.
I didn't say that.
Right, hold on. I'm saying that what you got to do is understand that this is the world we live in. And be aware that we've got people like this. We have people out there, a hell of a lot of them, man, a lot more than you think, who are more concerned about what happened to the Malaysia Airlines stock price than those people. Now, you can sit here and cry about it and say, gee, what a terrible world, and how can there be people like that, and oh, my goodness gracious gosh. Or just say, hey, you know, the jungle's full of all kinds of animals, and there's one that's an animal that we got to avoid. That's a predator. That's something we got to be aware of. And then continue on our merry way down the path.
Oh, I get it. So in other words, life is just a stroll through a jungle, and every now and again something leaps out of the bush and tries to claw my face off? No. No, I don't accept that, Mr. Henry. I want to go into the bush, find it, kill it, spear it, and have it for dinner.
Yeah, that's what I'd say, Mr. Henry. Mr. Shaw.
It's General Shaw, you clout.
General Shaw.
I understand. You agree with him. I understand. You guys are beating your heads against the wall. If you're gonna go at life, every time you see something bad, you want to do battle with it and destroy it. And yeah, sure, that's what we want to do. But the bigger picture here is knowing how to deal with it in the short term, knowing how to accept. Well, this is where it is. This is how it is. I feel bad about these people. I feel bad about this jet. Where are they? What happened to them? To me, it's a human tragedy. But to some people, and probably more than we really want to imagine, it's simply a stock price, you know? And until we think that those people, you know, we think those people are in a minority and it doesn't really matter. Those people are the ones that caused 2008.
What are you saying now, Phil? You ought to lay down before you fall down.
No. Those are the people that caused 2008. Sure, there's all kinds of other contributing factors, but those scumbags are the ones that were dishing out those cheap mortgages. Those scumbags were the ones that were trying to beat the guy across the street and handing out mortgages to people that couldn't afford to pay back a loan on a gumball, let alone a house. Those are the guys that were shorting the stocks. Those are the guys that were defrauding and Ponzi scheming and everything else. They're the guys that, had they not existed, the problems of 2008 would have been far less than they turned out to be.
Well, brother, you have got to go a long way to prove that one to me.
Yeah, I'm saying those are tall words.
No, I agree with Phil. Now that I hear what he's saying, I think you're onto something there, Phil.
You're trying to tell me that a handful of douchebags drove the entire world to the brink of disaster. I'll have none of it.
Well, okay. Thank you very much, Sandra Bernhardt.
It's Sarah Bernhardt, not Sandra. Sandra's the one with the big nose. Oh, brother.
All right, well, whoever. But that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it. All right, we're going to come back to and take a look at that. We already had Art Griego butcher it up and Dr. Ron Turner.
What do you want to look at, man?
I just wanted to see. I'll give you the right now. I'll just tell you that they don't have any idea. They have no idea. The pilots never signaled any problem. With today's technology, according to sources, it's unusual for a plane to vanish without a distress call. When they do disappear, it's typically because of an event such as a massive engine failure or an explosion. That would create, however, widely scattered debris, and search teams haven't been able to recover any remnants. So that leaves only one answer, in my opinion, that the debris it landed in some swamp. That the plane was hijacked and is someplace on an airstrip somewhere.
What, are you kidding or something, man? That's impossible. There'd be all kinds of jets that would be scrambled.
Jets that would be scrambled, huh?
Well, what Bud is saying in his moron way is, how do you hide a plane like that?
I'll tell you. If the radio contact ceases, if the transponder's off, if somehow the plane goes below radar or whatever, because I've seen enough movies about that where they go down low. You remember that one, General?
Why, in 30 Seconds Over Tokyo is classic.
Yeah. So it goes in low, sweeps in just over top of the housetops, you know.
Oh, why don't you guys? Tell you what, Phil, we'll open up the treehouse later and you and General could go play war.
Margaret, that's dirty pool. I'm telling you, there are ways of doing it.
I don't know whether it happened that way or not. But, all right, we'll be back on the Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com with more of this exciting speculation. Okay? Don't forget, 1 week from tonight, we start a new time, 9 a.m. Pacific, daylight time, the new Phil Henry Show. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Now, I had all kinds of people talking to me over this past weekend. I was talking about what happened to our background there.
Well, you were in a very, it looked like you were doing the Charlie Rose show.
Yeah, it looked like the Kevin Bacon chat show you did.
What Kevin? You mean Kevin Pollak?
Oh, yeah, Kevin Pollak. What a moron, man. Kevin Pollak, that guy, he's number one, man.
Yeah, Kevin's great guy. Kevin Bacon. Kevin Pollak, who, we did Kevin Pollak's chat show. That was a blast. That was a blast.
Boy, that's the last time you'll be on that show.
Why's that?
Well, I mean, he's got bigger fish to fry. His show's gotten a lot bigger now.
Oh, I see. So I was on it when it was small. His show was huge back then. He just had Tom Hanks on, though, didn't he?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. He just interviewed Tom Hanks. So how about that? I was interviewed on the same show that Tom Hanks has been interviewed on, so...
Well, Phil, let's not start blankety-blanking each other's blank just yet.
Margaret, you're quoting with the movie Pulp Fiction. That's nothing a woman should quote. What a filthy thing to quote.
I had to go there just to get Phil out of his reverie.
I'm not spacing out on it. All right, I do want to talk about, we'll go back to this flight in Malaysia. It's a crazy thing, man, because this Malaysian flight, they have stolen passports. They've got, it's weird. And
What? Suppose they'll hijack?
I don't know, man. I just don't know. I don't know. You know, look. It's possible. Let's say that was hijacked. Why does it explode? Well, because one of the hijackers does indeed have a bomb. Unlike 9/11, where they did not have real bombs, these guys are willing to blow the... I'm just theorizing now. Now, every hijacker today must know going in that the passenger revolt is a very real thing. It happened. You know, the floodgates on that opened with Flight 93. So any hijacker who hijacks an aircraft now has got to believe that he's going to have to deal with passengers on some level. So that bomb that guy's holding, it's going to have to be real if he's holding a bomb.
Well, why would he hold a bomb and blow the plane? What are they hijacking the aircraft for?
That's a good question. They're hijacking the aircraft to fly it into something, unless the passengers do revolt, and then they blow it up, you know.
Well, that's one hell of a fast roll. The plane, how many minutes outside of the aircraft was it?
Outside of the what?
I mean, the airport.
I don't know. I mean, it took off. It was out over the Gulf of Thailand. It was not that far along in its flight toward Beijing. I'm sure I can find it here. Nonetheless, it was not too far from the originating airport when it went off the radar and radio contact was lost. This is what I'm thinking. Because they lost the radio contact. And there was no distress call, so it was a sudden traumatic event, you know. It was a sudden event that was devastating, a major malfunction, as they like to say in the world of the technocrats and you know, the guys that do this for a living. So it must have been something sudden. If it's an explosion, then it was either the aircraft blew up because of a malfunction, and those stolen passports had nothing to do with anything other than a couple of guys trying to, you know, get a free ride on stolen passports, and that's very possible. But why no debris? You know, well, there's no debris because it fell down over this swamp is what I keep going to, you know. Because the value jet thing, as I was saying to Nikki, and as I said to Dr. Tarner and to Art Griego and to anybody that would listen.
Yeah, you know, and we've heard it already, Phil.
Wait, the audience hasn't heard it. Value jet. When it went down in the summer of 96, it went down at a high rate of speed, and it went right into the swamp, and it disappeared. And I'm telling you, it disappeared. I saw the photographs, the news photographers, the video cast, videographers were there, live television feeds were there. You did not see a trace of an aircraft. There were guys on airboats, and they were going very, very slowly through the area that they believed the jet had gone down in. Man, there was nothing there. And then gradually it began to yield. I believe there was a seat cushion came up. And the most frightening thing of the entire visual experience was looking at those gliding alligators, you know, with the eyes just above the muck as they're sailing along there in the water. And the commentators were saying, you know, these creatures are not stupid, and they know when there is something up. So, or when there's, you know, there's a possible source of food, as horrid as that sounds. Maybe they were looking at the guys in the airboats. I don't know, but there wasn't any trace of an aircraft. I mean, there was nothing. And that's what swamps, that's what a thick and deep and old swamp like the Everglades, Okefenokee, we were talking about with Flight 19, and quite possibly some of this this rainforest that is in the area where this jet might have gone down. Thailand, Kuala Lumpur, you know, Cambodia, places like that, Vietnam, places that have some backcountry and some rainforest, man, it's just, you know, it's, you know, they don't, it doesn't yield things for years, for decades. That's what I think happened. That's my own personal point of view. I can, you know, my mind, I don't believe that that's carved in stone, but I mean, come on, you know, if you're not finding it over water, what's the next logical place?
Well, that would mean over land, but if it was over land, you would have seen a plume of smoke or something. It would have blown up, and there would have been smoke for miles. Why, even that asteroid that landed in Russia, there were a couple of, I think they were reindeer herders or people that were farming reindeer at the time, which was very big, and they reported the reindeer flipping their lid. I don't know, that's not what the term you use.
You mean the reindeer got spooked?
Well, I don't want to use the word spook.
Well, what are you saying, General?
Wait, hold on. What do you mean reindeer was big at that time?
I don't know. All I'm telling you is when the comet hit Russia, all bets were off, and the reindeer got spooked. That's all I'm telling you.
Okay, well, the comet that hit Russia made a big-ass sound, and it was heard for thousands of miles, and it flattened the forest, and there was reports coming out of that area for years after that something happened. You can imagine, folks, how remote that was. That comet that hit the Soviet Union, or at that time it was still Russia, it was prior to World War One. The actual eyewitness accounts of that did not start surfacing until 10 years after it happened.
Well, why is that?
Because it was way to hell back in Siberia, man. It was way to hell. It happened in an area that was so sparsely populated, you know.
What are you talking about, so sparse? There's not a place on Earth where there ain't a person standing there, at least. Gotta be one guy standing there.
So there's one guy standing there.
That proves it.
But just because there's one guy, what do you mean there's gotta be one guy standing there?
On the whole Earth, nothing can, there's gotta be at least one guy hanging around, you know, who knows, making a phone call, well, not making a phone call, you know, but...
Making a phone call, huh?
One guy?
Okay, let's say there's at least one guy somewhere in the vicinity of something happening on the face of the Earth. Now what?
Okay, then the comet landed, and he goes, yay, I saw that.
Great. Who's he saying that to?
He could say it on a phone.
Oh, really? In 1906 or 08, you know, Russia?
Okay, so then it drives.
Ain't no cars back then, man. Not that many.
Yeah, there were, man. No cars back then.
Not in Siberia. Come on, man. Start thinking about it, will you? This is the backwater of Russia. It might as well be the 15th century back there. They got mules, they got whatever the hell they got.
All right, they get on a mule and they ride out for help. The guy says, go get help.
Yeah, go get help. It's going to take that dude months, probably, on a freaking horse. Maybe not months, but weeks. And who knows what happens to the guy between... Who knows? He might have gotten sidetracked.
Well, what do you mean sidetracked?
I don't know. Maybe he got killed. Maybe... I don't know. And again, you're talking about people that they're simple people, man. I mean, we're not, you got to understand something. You know, they don't know what they saw. Who are they going to go talk to? You know, they're going to go find the army. They're not even really all that cool with the authorities. These are tribal people. The less contact they have with authorities, the better. You know.
What are you talking about, Phil? People should not be afraid of the police authority.
Come on, General. These are people from the backwoods of Russia. This is Siberia. These cats are still dancing around a campfire singing songs to their ancestors. They don't know anything about...
What?
Okay, forget it.
Well, I still say, man, at least one guy could have seen it.
We ain't saying that a guy didn't see it. There's people that came out of Russia and they saw it. And they reported it. But it took years. Because one guy tells another guy sits down at the campfire, he farts, he has some reindeer meat, he's going, I don't know. Well, what do the guys say? Well, something blew up, out of hell with it. Yeah, okay, let's have some more reindeer meat. And
let's have some more reindeer meat. So they're sitting there, cutting a few. You make the Russian peasant sound so trivial, Phil, and I think it's very unfair.
Yeah, okay, Margaret. So sorry. We're going to be right back.
But don't be so sarcastic.
Look, I, you guys, there's a lot more at work here than just some simple people not doing their civic duty. Those cats, they don't think in terms of those kinds of things. And by the way, neither would we. All right.
Well, that's not fair.
Well, I just said it. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. We are live and mobile on our Listen Live line there at philhendryshow.com. And we're also live and mobile on TuneIn. So check us out. They are. 1 week from today, we are on the web. 50 years they've been married.
Because of that.
All right. Frank Gray is going to join us here. Frank Gray, prominent attorney and, of course, the husband of Margaret Gray on our newsmaker line in Beverly Hills or Santa Monica tonight. Frank, good evening.
How you doing, young man?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm better than Custer, Phil.
And Frank, Margaret has her theory. Margaret, why don't you tell us?
I think what happened here, Frank, very simply, is that this was the plane blowing up. Now, I know from experience, you know from the news, this wouldn't be the first time. And I think what happened was the stolen passports are simply a coincidence. And I think that the plane had, as Phil has said, a major malfunction and blew up in midair.
I don't know any better than anybody else. I'm an attorney. I'm not an aviation authority, although as a man, I suppose you could say I know more about it than I love my wife, but he's going to react. I know how you're going to react, Margaret. He's going to say I'm being a sexism pig.
Well, a sexist pig, yes.
All right, well, I'm telling you that as a man, I probably have a better handle on it, and I'm not trying to make a joke either. I believe that this was terrorism, and I don't think you know what you're talking about.
Why don't you think this could be a major malfunction, as Phil puts it, an explosion?
I told you I'm a man, and I got a handle on it, and let me say something.
Frank, this isn't any time to make your jokes, all right?
I'm not making a joke. You and I, you know that I've told you, and we've had this argument before, Phil. I try to tell him, as a man, I got to put my hand on it because of the experience that men have. And he tells me that I'm making jokes and I should have my mouth cleaned out with a big bag of soap or however he puts it.
All right, I'm lost. What are you talking about?
You're lost. He says that he thinks that this was a plane blowing up because the wiring went haywire, or it was like on the Apollo 13 when Jim Lovell was blowed into space, out into when she and the rest of the astronauts almost got blowed up. And I said to him that I don't believe that. I believe that this is a hijacking. Now, he says to me that he doesn't agree, and I say, I got a handle on it because I'm used to, you know what I'm saying, Phil, right? I don't think there's a man out there.
No, I don't know what you're saying.
No.
Well, there's three men in that studio. Now, somebody, or no, there's four men in that studio. Someone is going to, General Shaw, she knows, don't you, General?
I don't know what you're talking about, Gray. I have no idea. What do you mean you got a handle on it?
Because of the fact that as men, we generally got to grab something once a day. Okay, there I said it.
Oh, God, you are such a child. You know something? Anything to be a big baby.
Are you listening to him? This is one of the reasons why I married him, because he's honest. But also the reason why I regret marrying him, because he's honest.
Frank, you are such a child.
I'm not kidding. I told you I wasn't kidding. He don't believe me. You know.
All right, Frank, so in other words, we got a handle on things because that's what we spend most of our time doing.
Bingo. Bingo. We got most of our time that is what we spend. We got a handle on things.
Well, you just went backwards on that one, Frank. You want to take another run at it?
No, I don't feel like taking another run on it. I'm telling you that what he's saying is very, very unlikely. But I will tell you this, Margaret. Do you want to bet on it?
Do I want to bet what?
Let's put some money on it. Let's quit talking about it. You think it was a catastrophic malfunction of the aircraft itself, and I believe that it was a terrorist attack And I say we put money on it, and we put money on it now, and I'd like it to be a significant amount of money.
All right, I tell you what, you want it to be five figures?
Now you're talking my talk. Now you're talking turkey. Now you're talking my language. Okay, let's go. Let's go low.
All right, let's make it an even $10,000.
You're on. Oh, God.
Yeah, and now he's remembering where I get my money. He gives me an allowance.
Can we go back on that?
Well, just better anyway, okay? What difference does it make?
Because it ain't any money that I'm going to be winning. All the money he has, he gets from me. Because I give him an allowance.
How much allowance do you give him? I mean her.
I don't... That's none of your business.
Yeah, Phil, that's really none of your business.
But I can tell you, it's four figures a week. It's a very healthy four figures a week. And for that, I expect a little something. I think you know what I'm talking about, too. And,
You don't have to get into that, Frank.
Well, either I take it out of you one way or I get it out of you another. So, if it means I get a cash rebate, all right, let's talk about that. And
Frank, you are the lowest thing there is. You know that I am a woman to you.
Yeah, you are. But sometimes I need a little something more. And I think lately in that department, I deserve a cash rebate.
Why don't you go straight?
What did he say? What did he say, Phil?
No, I'd go straight to... And she just got up and walked out.
Well, you're scared that he's been doing that ever since I married him. But I love him.
Okay, Frank, good luck, man. I mean, not good luck. I don't even care about your bet. Thank you and goodbye.
Well, wait a minute. Don't get pissed off.
So that's wonderful. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Jesus. All right, what were we talking about? This is far better than...
You want to talk about the autobiography?
Yes. Yes. I am now commencing a project which could be of interest. It may not be of interest. But it's a autobiography. A lot of people have wanted me to write something, maybe having to do with my life, maybe not. I don't know that I have a story to tell that's all that exemplary or interesting. However, people have asked for something, so I've been thinking about it. And for some reason, the title, In Your Wildest Hallucinations, sort of congealed in my mind. You just came in just to sit down and make sure I see you yawn?
Well, I went out to get myself something to drink. I came in, I heard what you were talking about, and I yawned. It doesn't mean what you're saying is bad. I'm just saying it made me yawn.
You know, Margaret, just because it isn't about you...
Yeah, there. Thank you, General.
Just because it isn't about you, you know...
Oh, I see. You think I'm a big, fat ego case. You think I'm a walking tub of ego... On a petite frame.
No, we think you're walking tub of ego on a larger, not big.
Get him to kick your...
Hey, wait, watch it. Watch it now. Listen, bud, you know when you say stuff like that, you're just begging for it.
Yeah, but a man's got to say what a man got to say.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that so much, John Wayne. I'll take that under advisement, as you like to say, bud.
All right, can I finish? What I was going to say was... So I commenced today the writing of this. Now, the first thing that I did, because I want to get some family history, is I started looking into my mother and my father and my father's military service, and I went into a lot of that and the history of the family before I was even born.
Well, Phil, you don't want this to be a project that is so historically... shall we say, historically caked out, I think is what the kids call it, that it becomes cumbersome or tiresome. I think you want it to, any autobiography needs to leap along, to sprint along, as if it's leaping and sprinting. I know that that's a ridiculous...
Well, you want it to be an easy read, is what you're saying.
An easy read, but an interesting read, yes. And that's why I like to think of a good read as being something that you're frolicking... Well, yeah, you're dancing through, something like that.
Well, I don't know about that.
But you haven't... Have you ever read a book? Have you... I know you've read things, but have you read things that you could put together into a book?
Yeah, I have. I've read... For instance, I've read newspaper articles that someday, if I read enough of them, you could make a book out of it.
Yes, yeah, someday if you read enough of them, that's... How long do you think that'll be, bud?
A few more years.
Great.
All right. I think that I... Appreciate what you're saying, Margaret. Now, we're going to give a little family history, and then we will launch into... I don't know how I'm going to do it, man. I just don't know how I'm going to do it. But here's what I thought. Rather than asking yourself, is my life interesting, just write the damn thing, you know? And if it is, it is. If it ain't, it ain't, you know? And if there's takers. If there's not, there's not. You see what I'm saying?
Well, so, no, I don't see what you're saying.
You're saying, Mr. Ender, write it down even if it's boring?
Yeah, write it down even if it's boring. Why not? Everybody ought to do it. Everybody should write their autobiography. Everybody should write the story of their life. Everyone.
Wait a second, Henry. Why, we'd be inundated with the most clown-like, plod-like, plodding garbage. Why, we'd never get through a day.
No, I think everybody should write the history of their lives. Everyone should practice that. If I was emperor, if I was king, if I could enforce one thing, if I could force people into one thing, I would force people to keep a daily journal of their lives. They would have to, every single solitary day, they would have to write at least 2 pages on what happened that day. It would have to be legible, and it would have, and if they didn't, I would have them executed by firing squad.
Oh, stop it.
Well, no. I mean, this is a fantasy. You know, this is just...
Yeah, would this be something if you could have anything you wanted?
Yes, if I could have anything I wanted, I would summarily execute people that don't do what I want them to do. Bud.
Yay!
Cut. So, yeah, that's what I would do.
I'm getting back to the other thing, too.
Yeah, about the women on the desert island. All right, on the desert island, I was going to say. Okay, that having been dispensed with, let's take a break and come back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and, of course, online at TuneIn as well. We'll find out. We'll update you guys on this story, this Malaysia jet mystery. The facts not adding up. Let's see, who's this? Edward Snowden urges Americans to learn to protect identities from the government. I guess Snowden... Did he do a Reddit interview today or something like that? What was the...
I think he was on Comedy Central.
Comedy Central? Oh, he's at South by Southwest. Well, what...
That's great.
He was what?
He was behind 7 proxies so that he couldn't be located. He was on video at South by Southwest.
Now, South by Southwest is a music and comedy festival, right?
One of those festivals like Comic-Con and all
that. What has he got to do with anything having to do with that?
Well, it's information sharing.
Yeah. All right, so let's check it out. Find out what Mr. Snowden said today at the South by Southwest here. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com and see whatever else the heck we can find, man. I don't know, but we'll see. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. No, bud, no.
That's the thing.
No, it ain't aliens, all right? It ain't aliens. I'm off the whole, we're not going to talk anymore about it, okay? They haven't found these people. I don't want to talk anymore about it.
But what do you think of the whole alien?
No, there's no aliens, there's no aliens, there's no aliens. And I told you that Bermuda Triangle is not aliens, and that's all there is to it.
All right, so for you to dismiss what so many people believe...
There's no aliens, you know.
Well, you're dismissing what hundreds of millions of Americans, or not hundreds of... hundreds of millions of aliens have believed...
Hundreds of millions of aliens?
I mean hundreds of millions of Earthlings, Earth people, you know, people, humans, in other words, and the alien...
I don't care what I'm dismissing. There's no aliens, there's no space people, and they didn't take the aircraft, and I'm not going to engage in that. Oh, by the way, I just saw him on television here doing a promotion. Wild Bill Guinier passed on, a member of the 101st Airborne, one of the Band of Brothers featured, and I believe he was in his 90s. I don't know his exact age, but he was featured in a great number of documentaries and reports on those exploits of the Band of Brothers, the Charlie Company of 101st Airborne Division in World War II. He just passed on over the weekend in his 90s. Tough old guy, man, and there's one less of them.
Yeah, well, the World War II veterans are dying at the rate of 1,000 a week, Phil.
Well, by that point, there not going to be anybody left in no time at all.
Well, in no time at all. I mean, yeah, they're going, and they're going very, very rapidly. So you should, if you know a World War II veteran, you should talk to them. You should get their story. And I'm just talking about the ones that would like to tell it. And also, don't listen to anybody on... Don't listen to any... I'm sorry to have to say this, but I'm going to say it. Don't listen to any self-described veteran on Facebook. See what I'm saying? When some guy says, well, I'm a veteran, and let me tell you how things are, I would take that with a grain of salt. Because I remember on Memorial Day, I said, you should talk to a veteran. And here come two or three of these guys saying, we don't want anybody talking to us. And I remember thinking, I don't know who you guys are, and I could care less. So, you know, if you think you know who a veteran is, first of all, find out if he really is one. And there's ways of finding that out. And then talk to them directly. But
well, Phil, you're on Facebook a lot.
Yeah, because we're promoting the show. But that's how I know about this. I mean, I'm on Facebook a lot because we do a lot of promotion there for the radio show. And in the process, you're dealing with a lot of people. You're talking to a lot of people. And some people, Facebook is a place like any other place, any other social media. It's a place where you can be something you're not, if you want to be. You can be anything you want to be. You can be, a test pilot, a veteran, a cop, any kind of superhuman, anything you want to be, you know. And you can be anonymous. You can be well-known. So you have to understand that when you're talking to people over there and make sure that you are clear as to who the hell it is you're talking to. That's all I'm trying to say. I didn't mean to mess up my conversation here about veterans. All right, so Snowden urges Americans to learn to protect identities online, declaring that the U.S. government is setting fire to the future of the Internet by spying on Americans and being unaccountable for that. Former national security... Setting fire to the future of the Internet?
Yeah, because you won't be able to even be able to be on the Internet anymore.
Okay. Former national security, that's another thing. Eric Snowden's a guy that had a whole lot of files. I don't know anything about this guy other than the fact that he grabbed a bunch of files, he grabbed a bunch of stuff, he made a bunch of stuff available to people. I don't know whether this guy himself is of any particularly high level of intelligence. I don't know if he's got any, you know, ability to analyze the world beyond just taking a piece of paper and scanning it, but I don't know if he really knows the world in a subjective sense in a very intelligent way.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about Eric Snowden, whether this guy's got 5 cents worth of real brains or is he just some guy who's a really efficient little bureaucrat, a little technocrat. Speaking from Russia, where he turned up after leaving his NSA eavesdropping station in Hawaii last year with classified government information and leaking some of it to The Guardian and The Washington Post, Snowden spoke to a capacity audience of about 3,000 at the exhibit hall at the Austin Convention Center. It was the same venue in which WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange spoke via Skype on Saturday. A copy of the U.S. Constitution appeared behind Snowden on the large screen. Like Assange, he offered few clues about his life in exile and gave no hints about how long he plans to stay in Russia. Speaking of Internet freedom and knowing things, this guy's being really cute, isn't he?
Well, now, wait just a minute, Phil. That's dirty pool, as the general would like to say.
Wait, why is that? If this guy wants Internet freedom, where's he staying?
Well, Phil, he's trying to protect himself from being outed.
Oh, he's in Russia, man. Who's going to get to him? You see what I'm saying? If he's in Russia and he's being protected by the Russian government, and I'm not talking about the U.S. government. The U.S. government could find out where this guy is, like, tomorrow. But I'm talking about just you and me. Why can't we know where he is?
Well, you know he's in Russia.
Then what's he hiding from? He's got the Russian government protect. What? He doesn't want me to have his address. Am I going to get on a plane and fly there and knock his door down and rob him? What is he talking about? You know.
You don't want to be doxxed.
Doxxed. This cat, everyone knows where this guy, what country he's in. I'm assuming that at least two major governments know where he is. All right, so... he offered few clues about his life in exile, gave no hints about how long he plans to stay in Russia. Instead, he and moderators Chris Sagoyan and legal counsel Ben Wisner, both of the ACLU, kept the focus on how private citizens can protect their online identities and how companies can be doing more to protect their customers' identities. And they figured that SXSW, that is South by Southwest, with its young, tech-savvy audience, was the right forum to make their case. South by Southwest and the tech community, the people in this room in Austin, they're the folks who can fix this, Snowden said. There's a political response that needs to occur, but there's also a tech response that needs to occur. Encryption, a process that makes it harder for would-be spies to decipher information, is the key, they said. If customer encryption, they've been using encryption for years. That doesn't necessarily.
What's encryption?
Encryption is simply scrambling. It's using a scrambled language. It's using a different language, using a spy language, using symbols, and making those symbols something that they cannot, that cannot be deciphered, is the key. But they've been unscrambling encrypted messages since they invented encrypted messages. So I don't know what he's talking about. Maybe there's some kind of new.
Maybe it's a company.
Yeah, maybe they encrypt in the name of a company.
What do you mean, maybe it's a company?
That's the name of the company.
Now, encryption, I don't see it being the name of it. It says here encryption, a process. Encryption, a process that makes it harder for would-be spies to decipher information. That's a pretty good definition. Encryption is simply using symbols, all kinds of scrambled up symbols that mean something to the sender and to the receiver, but not to anybody else seeing it in between. They said if customers and companies use encryption, it would make the bulk collection of digital information, which the NSA documents exposed, more expensive and time intensive. You notice they didn't say it would make getting that information impossible. Yeah.
Well, so they can't guarantee it? The hell with it.
No, they can't guarantee it because any encryption can be deciphered. So here, there's something you can use. How about decipher instead of encryption?
They use decipher.
Yeah, they can use decipher to decipher their own encryption. How about that? It's a hard word. All right, we'll be back. The world famous Phil Henry Show. This is Monday, man. You know what? Mondays can be anything. We'll be back.